Hi everyone, I'm Ross Edwards, four-time author, coach and host of the Deep Psychology Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about the personality typology systems. This is going to be the first episode in a small two-part series on these systems. And I want to say that learning about these typologies and discovering my own personality type has been rather eye-opening. It's clarified parts of me that have long confused me. It's helped me honor my quirks, helped me be more authentic, and it's helped me see that I fit into life in a unique way that other people don't. And this is true for all of us. And learning about your own personality type might just do the same for you. We tend to evaluate people through our own lenses, and we struggle to see the world from their point of view. And we also look at ourselves and we feel confused about why we are as we are. And what the personality typologies do, whatever one you want to use, because we're going to cover several in this mini series, is they help you achieve a reliable snapshot of your personality and your tendencies, which helps understand yourself better and others. And it just helps you navigate the world better. So in this mini-series, we're going to look at the main personality typology systems and how to use them for these ends. So we're going to talk about what is a personality typology system, and we're going to look at the introvert and extrovert typology, the masculine and feminine typology, and also the Myers-Briggs. Next week, we're going to look at a couple of other typologies along with a sort of more general look from my point of view as what it means to actually have a certain personality type. So today we're going to start by talking about what the personality typology systems actually are. Before we do that, quick mention from my sponsor, Spirit Quest Tours, which takes small groups on exclusive sacred journeys to Egypt, Peru, and Turkey. Get $500 off your next trip by using the discount code ROSS on the booking page linked below. Also want to remind you I've got new long-form episodes every Wednesday with snippets on Thursday, Sunday and Tuesday, always at 9 p.m. Central European Time, 8 p.m. UK Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you want to go deeper with this work, join my fortnightly newsletter, pre-order my latest book, The Boundless Body, or try a free coaching session with me. Links are in the description for all of those. And just want to say that to go along with this episode, I recommend you listen to my episode called What is Psychology, which is episode 143. You'll find that in my psychology playlist. And I also encourage you to look at my Enneagram playlist, which I will also link to in the description, because the Enneagram system is a very famous personality typology system, and in fact it's the one that I tend to use the most when I'm trying to make sense of myself and other people. We'll be talking about that next week, but I do have an entire 20 episode series talking about it, so you might want to check that out as you're listening along to this mini series. All right, anyways, let's get going with what is a personality typology system, because that sounds like quite a mouthful. Really, we can just think of it as a different way of classifying personalities. You know, and when we're saying a personality or a personality type, we really just mean a defining set of traits that remain pretty stable throughout life. You know, these things are visible in our speech, our behavior, our emotional style, the choices we make, and so on. And, you know, we talk about people's personalities all the time in common, you know, in ordinary conversation. And what these systems are is just a more formal way, this is up for debate, but a more scientifically grounded way of classifying people's personalities. And what the personalities tend to do, the systems tend to do, is they try and create like a minimal number of personality types that cover the entire range of human personality. So you might have, in the Enneagram, for example, you have 9. And what they're basically saying is, all people fall into these 9 personality types or some combination. So it's like they're trying to find the most essential personality types out there. And this is important, as I talked about in the introduction, because people with different personalities, they see the world differently. They have different drives, different needs, different defenses, and different fears, which all remain rather stable throughout life. You know, I'm sure you know this in family members and friends and loved ones and so on. It's like they almost become very predictable because this is their personality, and it's like hardwired into who they are, right? And knowing a sort of a formal description of their personality type can be really useful, as I said, because it helps you understand them. You can think of your personality also as your character, how you are on like a permanent basis. Now, it's tricky because I kind of, when people make claims about people being, you know, people are fixed and people remain stable throughout life, I'm very skeptical of that. For so many reasons, but you know, I think if we all look at ourselves, we can identify things that have remained pretty stable throughout life, regardless of how much we have changed, both internally and in terms of like our life circumstances. There are parts of us that remain pretty stable. So yeah, each personality typology system, whether it's the Enneagram or Myers-Briggs or the introvert extrovert or whatever, they each define a certain set of personalities that cover the entire range of human personalities, or they attempt to do that, and therefore they enable you to identify yourself within that system, because clearly you must fall into it if indeed it is an effective system. And on the converse of that, if you just select a random type, you should find people that meet that. You know, whenever I look at these systems or I discover a new system, I always think, do I know someone that fits that type? And, you know, more often than not, I do. And it's funny because you end up like seeing the people around you as like just these different types of people. Like they just have these different personality types. They seem so different, but you look at them and say, oh, actually, they're just different personality types. Now, I don't want to reduce all of human psychology to this, but it's a very useful perspective to have. There's actually hundreds or even thousands of personality typology systems, you know, that have been built throughout human history, East and West, ancient, modern, you know, masculine, feminine, as we're going to talk about, the Myers-Briggs we're going to talk about, the Enneagram we're going to talk about, the astrological profiles we're going to talk about, introvert, extrovert we're going to talk about. Then you've got things like DISC, the Strengths Finder, the Human Design System, the Lover, Warrior, Magician, King profiles. And even things like nationalities are sort of personality types, because it's, you know, when we talk about people from different countries, you know, I know this because I live in Spain and I'm Scottish and also lived in England for a while. So I see this more than a lot of people probably, is like each country, you know, you can quite easily get lost in stereotypes, and you can quite get lost in like oversimplifying people. But there is a national character that does sort of repeat across everyone who, or not everyone, but a lot of people who are of that nationality. And I see it in Spain, like Spanishness is different from Scottishness, which is different from being English, right? And so even nationalities, you can think of them as a personality typology system. And, you know, if you learn what exactly is it, what does it mean to be Scottish? What does it mean to be Spanish? Well, that gives you information about your own character. And it may seem quite obvious, but, you know, ponder the fact that if you were brought up in a different country, you would be totally different in those ways that your nationality defines you. And so, you know, it just gives you different intel on who you are and, you know, what has influenced you in sort of the formation of your personality. The sort of downside to this is because there's so many different personality typology systems, and because, in fact, you can have several within one system. Like often if you do like some sort of test on one of these systems, they won't just come out like 100% on one type. It'll come out in percentages. So you might have two or three that are quite dominant. And so if you use like 20 different systems and then you get two or three results for each one, you're probably going to be more confused than before, you know, because you've got like 40, 50, 60 different descriptions of who you are. What I would actually suggest you do is just choose a few that resonate with you and explain your personality. Like I found in my own sort of process that certain personality profiles really jump out and they bring like instant clarity to who you are. And it's like the 80-20 thing, you know, what is the 20% of information that I could get about my personality type that would explain like a large chunk? I think that's a good way to go, because if not, you can just do an endless personality test over and over again and like trying to, you know, really find like all the nitty gritty details, when actually just one or two or three personality type, you know, using one or two or three systems would be enough for you to get most of the benefit of it. So anyway, we're going to talk about that more as we go on. Let's talk about the first personality typology, which is introvert versus extrovert. So we're all familiar with this. In fact, this is something that is sort of one of the pieces of psychology that is like in our ordinary parlance now. You know, this isn't reserved for people who study psychology and do, you know, therapy and stuff. This is just part of our ordinary understanding of people, which is great. The only problem is that it can become sort of a cliche and it can become sort of fashionable. You know, people who want to be edgy and kind of alternative will try and be an introvert because introverts are seen as sort of edgy and alternative. Whereas actually there are people who are just introverts who are not trying to be introverted. They just are. And I'm one of them. So this is one of the systems that has really helped me understand myself, because I'm surrounded by quite a lot of people who, I don't know if they're extroverts, like sometimes it's hard to tell, but they don't like introverts very much. And it creates a lot of problems for us, because things that I am not able to do past a certain point, which I'll probably talk about as we go along here, they just cannot understand it. And knowing that I'm a pretty introverted person is very good for me, because it helps me realize what my limits are in certain situations. It's also tempting to kind of put yourself in a box and say, well, I'm introverted, therefore, you know, I'm not going to improve my conversational skills, or I'm not going to socialize too much or any. That's not what we're here for. We're not here to like learn a taxonomy to limit ourselves more. What we're actually trying to do is we're trying to find freedom in the limitations we have. You know, as an introvert, I do have certain limitations and I'm not imposing them on myself. They're just patterns that appear, right? And they're patterns that I've seen throughout my life without me trying to. However, knowing that those patterns are there helps me manage it better, you know, because I'm not saying I like the patterns that I have. They're just what I have and I've learned to work within them, right? So anyways, what are introverts? Well, I'm sure if you sat here and you sort of wrote down your own list, you could come up with a few markers of introverts, because we all know what it means, but let's just make it very clear. So introverts tend to get their energy from solitude. They feel overwhelmed by excessive socializing and stimulation. This doesn't necessarily mean they have social phobia or they're socially awkward, which a lot of people sort of, when they straw man introverts, they tend to say, you know, well, they're awkward and they have social phobia and that. That's not it. They just prefer being alone and they sort of have a limit. You know, they have a limit where if they're around people too much, you just get overwhelmed. And that's me. Like, if I'm around too many people for too long, it overwhelms me more than it does other people, right? And when it comes to friendships, introverts tend to just have a few close friends because they don't like shallow friendships. Like, they'd rather have five or less good friends than 30 people who don't really know them very well. it can get, you can, it takes more time to get to know introverts because they tend to be more reserved and more private and they don't just reveal their entire life to you. However, once you are friends with them, you become part of like the VIP club that have access to their inner world, because there's not many of them, right? You know, an introvert won't just tell you their life story the first time you meet them, but if they trust you and if you're with them over time, you will discover they actually have a rather rich inner world because they prefer being alone. They also have interest. This is something I learned quite recently, actually, and it really sort of changed my view of things. What they've discovered actually is, I don't know where this was done, who did the study and how they did it, but basically I heard that it's been discovered that introverts have a higher baseline level of neural activity than extroverts do. So this explains the fact that when introverts are in a stimulating environment, they quickly get overloaded and overwhelmed because they're already at a higher baseline. It's like there's more going on inside them already before they get, like, you know, before there's music and there's people and there's stuff going on. They're already, like, there's already a lot going on. And therefore, like, that extra incoming stimuli, really, that takes them over the edge into, like, being burnt out and feeling tired and so on. So if you do something like, you know, let's say you're in a social event and you're one of these people who need to get outside and take a deep breath and have a bit of time on their own and pretend that they're going for a walk when they're really just standing next to a wall or something, this is something that an introvert would do. So extroverts are pretty much the opposite. Extroverts get their energy from stimulation and socializing, and they actively seek them out. They feel more comfortable in company than they do alone. They tend to be more open, so they tend to just readily share details of their life with anyone. They want to be the center of attention, and they want to stir up the atmosphere. And they don't tend to get so overwhelmed in, like, social events and so on. So that's what an extrovert is. Now, it's, you know, these are things we all know, but I really want you to consider that, you know, look at, like, the people in your life and think about, you know, who is an introvert? Who tends to be more extroverted? What about yourself? Are you an introvert or an extrovert? And this will help you understand people without holding a grudge against them, because this is something I'm going to explain in a minute. I tended to kind of, well, I still do, to be honest, because it's hard, but I'm getting better at it, you know. I used to kind of really hold a grudge against extroverts because I couldn't comprehend them. But now I realise that I'm introvert and they're an extrovert, and it's kind of just like a personality thing. It's like, well, I'm not necessarily, I don't really agree with, like, their way of doing things, but I can, you know, I can empathise because I'm just a different, you know, it's two sides of the same coin, essentially. Before we talk a little bit more about the introvert-extrovert taxonomy, quick mention from my sponsor, Spirit Quest Tours, which takes small groups on exclusive sacred journeys to Egypt, Peru, and Turkey. Get $500 off your next trip by using the discount code ROSS on the booking page linked below. So how can you constructively use the introvert-extrovert taxonomy? Well, I'd first of all encourage you to do a test, right? I don't have a favoured one. If you just go and type on the internet introvert-extrovert test, you're going to get like 10 different options, right? So, well, more than that, but plenty of options. I would go and do one and just see what comes out. It shouldn't surprise you. Like, you probably already know, because this is like common knowledge, right? When I tested, the first time I did a personality test about introvert, extrovert, and I came out an introvert, I really wasn't surprised, but I was kind of like, okay, cool. Now I know, right? You know, I have an external reference for something that I've always kind of felt. Like, I've always known I was a bit reserved and a bit, it's not that I'm antisocial, it's just that I don't speak unless I feel like there's something worth saying. And I also know I'm not the type of person to, like, talk a stranger's head off. Like, that's just not me. I'll talk a friend's head off, that's true. But, like, you know, I could just see parts of my personality that were introverted and always have been. And just having that external reference is really nice. Interestingly, about a third of the population are introverts, apparently. So it is a minority, and this is why people want to make an identity out of it and be quirky because of it. And again, I don't advise you to do that. That's not very constructive. Just be who you are, right? Don't fake it, because that's just going to tie you in even greater knots. Discover what you are. Discover what parts of you are introverted and respect them. And also realize it can be limiting, you know, and it can limit you in certain ways, but it also can be a very good thing. And I've found in my own life, it can be a very positive thing, being introverted. Introverts and extroverts tend to misunderstand one another, just like any other personality types, really. They tend to misunderstand one another. You know, introverts and tend to see extroverts as shallow and over the top. That is pretty much a perfect description of how I often see extroverts. And extroverts tend to see introverts as stubborn and antisocial. And I know that people often see me as stubborn and antisocial. So, you know, what can you do? It's kind of funny. And it's interesting because as an introvert, the extroverts in my life, and a few of them are very close to me, have made me feel boring and hermit-like. And they've made comments about me being that way. And, you know, I kind of see it as funny now, but I also don't think that's a true description of me. Like, I don't see myself as a boring person. I feel like, because when I'm on my own, I don't feel bored. Maybe I just don't get, you know, I get excited about other things. You know, I don't get excited about going out there and socializing with 100 people. Like, I like it, but it's not like my thing. My thing is, you know, writing books and thinking about psychology and writing music and so on, right? So these are solo pursuits. And so this is why there's a discord between the two, because they don't really understand each other. They understand each other through their own lens. And only by stepping out of your own lens as an introvert or an extrovert can you understand the other. Like, you can't understand them on your own terms. You really can't, because you are not the other type, right? And yeah, once I really sort of realised I was an introvert, for sure, I more clearly realised what the upsides and downsides are. You know, for example, one of the upsides is that I feel really comfortable on my own. I don't need to seek out lots of social time. I pick and choose my moments. Because I'm on my own, I can think a lot. I can make discoveries about things that other people don't. I can, I feel like I have a better sense of who I am, because I know who I am regardless of who's around me. These kind of things. The downsides are that, you know, socializing can be difficult. Sometimes it can be overwhelming. Sometimes don't have the same sort of conversational ability that other the extroverts do. You know, whatever. The point is not to, again, force yourself to be a certain way. It's just to sort of realise what are the downsides and upsides, and how can I take better care of myself? Because if you have a genuine need after 3 or 4 hours of socialising to have a bit of quiet time and go for a walk or a lie down or whatever, you've got to realise that you're not being selfish. You know, you're just doing what you need to do to get through the social event, right? And you're not doing it as a personal slight on others, even if that's what they think it is. I'd also say that introverts, being introverted or extroverted, it's not an all or nothing thing. You know, both of these tendencies appear in us. Think of it more as like a, you know, overall, which are you? Because you can certainly find both of the tendencies within you. It's not so simple. So it's good to know which one you are most of the time, but it's also good to realize, right, okay, I'm not all of that. Because if you don't realize that, you can make an identity out of it, and you can become artificially more introverted or artificially more extroverted, because you now have this label. I would ask you to use self-observation to look at your behavior, in different situations, and see which of parts of it are more of an extroverted type of behavior and more of an introverted type of behavior. And ask questions like, what do extroverts have that I don't have, or what do introverts have that I don't have? And this way you're increasing your repertoire, which is a theme of the personality types. Knowing about them helps you increase your repertoire. All right, let's move on to the masculine and feminine personality typology. So again, this one, masculine and feminine, what we're basically saying is that regardless of actual biological gender, we tend to be more masculine or more feminine, and we all embody masculinity and femininity to a different sort of ratio, shall we say, right? And this should make intuitive sense to you, because again, this is part of our knowledge. We talk about men being quite feminine, which 50 years ago would have been a totally weird conversation to have, or maybe not 50, maybe a bit longer than that, but still. And we talk about women being more masculine than another, you could talk about a friend being more masculine than another female friend that you have, or something like that. So we intuitively understand there's this thing called masculine and feminine. And we want to just make this more formal and put it on the table as another thing that you can understand about yourself. When we say masculine, what we're basically saying is that biological males, in a sort of traditional sense, tend to embody certain traits, things like strength and assertion, independence, achievement, ambition. They tend to be analytical, they tend to tease things apart and analyze the pieces. They tend to create emotional distance. They tend to be risk takers. They tend to push through obstacles, and they tend to be more hierarchical. Whereas biological women tend to embody feminine traits, which things like communion, receptivity, empathy, deference, sensitivity, motherliness. Women tend to think more holistically and eclectically. They favor intuition and insight. They take action through non-action. They tend to be more patient, and they tend to try and find the commonalities in people rather than create hierarchies between them. So again, when we say masculine and feminine, we use those labels because they are typically associated with biological men and biological women, respectively. But think of them as different poles, right? Is the labels are really unimportant. You can actually think of it as agency, as instead of calling it masculine and feminine, you can say agency and communion. Biological men tend towards agency and biological women tend towards communion. However, we all embody both of these profiles, regardless of our sex, biologically, or our gender identification. We tend to embody both of these in different ratios. And just think of them as forces within you, right? In my case, I can see a lot of the feminine in me. The thing about favoring intuition and insight over pure ambition and pure achievement, that really resonates with me. And the thing about being patient rather than pushing through obstacles and taking action through non-action, these are things that I really resonate with. However, I also, and when I look at other biological men around me, I see a lot of the agency or the masculinity they have that I do not have, like creating an emotional distance. I can see that in a lot of men that I know. And I genuinely don't think I do that. It's hard to know from the inside exactly what effect you have on people, but I tend not to do that. I tend to try and emotionally connect with people. And it's one of the, it's actually for one of the reasons I tend to actually socialize better with women, because I feel like there's more of a natural rapport. Whereas with men, it can feel like you're, it's like trying to get blood from a stone sometimes, trying to form a connection. And that's, you know, so I can see the feminine in me, and I really, and I can, you know, I can see the masculine. I could sit here and talk about how I have all the masculine stuff as well. So I really encourage you to look at your own behavior, and you'll realize that you embody both the masculine and the feminine to some degree. You know, I look at my partner, I look at my family members, and I look and I can see, shit, like this female in my life embodies a lot of masculinity, or this male in my, you know, the person, a male who's close to me, has a lot of feminine traits in them. And you know, it's just, it's fascinating to see both. And it's one of the advantages of being alive nowadays is that the feminine is not being repressed so much in men, and the masculine is not being repressed so much in women. In fact, a lot of, you know, if you, one of the ways of understanding like the current sort of movements in sort of like gender identification and so on, is to realize that what is happening is that things that were previously considered masculine or feminine are now being adopted by both sexes, which is why we might want to call them agency and communion, because actually these traits are no longer just purely masculine or feminine. They're just different poles of like human operation, if you like, or human, the human psyche. So I really encourage you to look at yourself, and if you're a really feminine female or a really masculine male, or, you know, any combination of the those, you know, you might realize that it causes certain problems for you, because you're basically missing out on human repertoire. You're basically missing out on things that you could do that you aren't doing, because maybe you're, you have this idea that you need to be super masculine if you're a man, which means, you know, agency, and it means goals, and it means being driven, and it means not getting too emotionally attached. You might realize that that is actually hurting you. And then being a female, or having too much communion as a woman, you realize that maybe you're too deferent, maybe you're too focused on other people, and it actually hurts you, right? Another thing that I'd like to say is that the masculine is actually being sort of repressed quite a lot in the postmodern pluralistic world, and we venerate the feminine a lot, which is great, but again, I don't see things like that. I think we need to have a full repertoire. We're alive as human beings, and we need a lot of tools in our armor to function well in this world. And to me, it's about opening up, and it's about fit, and it's about being adaptive. And if you just have this idea that, you know, femininity is yucky, and masculinity or masculinity is like, it's like toxic, well, you're going to notice the effect that will have on you. So my recommendation is to open up and to broaden your repertoire. All right, let's talk about the final personality typology system we're going to cover today, which is Myers-Briggs personality type system, which if you have studied some psychology, or you've done some personality type profiling before, you've probably heard of the Myers-Briggs. It's considerably more complicated than the sort of the two-dimensional typology systems that we've discussed so far. The Myers-Briggs actually goes back to Carl Jung, who had his own personality typology system, and this inspired Catherine Briggs and Isabel Myers to develop their system in the 1940s, and their system was first published in the work Psychological Types in 1962. So your Myers-Briggs type is based on four different dimensions. You could think of these as like, they're four binary dimensions, that all of them together combine to give you your type. So the first one is introverted versus extroverted. And in this case, they describe that as how you derive energy. You derive it from solitude, you're introverted. If you derive it from socializing, you're extroverted. The second one is how you view the world. So you can view it through intuition or through sensing. Intuition means you're imaginative and focus on abstract ideas and concepts. Sensing means that you're practical and logical and rely on facts. So intuition versus sensing. Third is your decision making. So you make decisions through thinking or you make it through feeling. Thinking is with the head, feeling is with the heart. And four, how others see you. The first one is judging. The second one is perceiving. So if you're judging, if you've got the label judging, it's because you're organized, you're informed, you're efficient, you're productive. If you're perceiving, people see you as being spontaneous and flexible. So if you get, you know, you take one of each of these four dimensions as a letter. So the first one, how you derive energy, introversion versus extroversion, is I or E. So it's I or E for the first dimension. All four has a letter. So it's I or E, N or S, T or F, J or P. Don't need to remember that, but just so you know. If you bunch those, let's say you're I on the first one, N on the second one, T on the third one, J on the fourth one. So that means your overall type is INTJ. Now, all of the Myers-Briggs type are just four letters put together. And there's 16 possible types because there's a binary choice in each of the four dimensions. 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 is 16. So there's 16 Myers-Briggs types. For example, the ENTJ is the commander. The INTJ is the inspector, because each of the 16 types also has a label to describe its overall sort of character. Now, you might like to do a test to find your dominant Myers-Briggs type. You can also sort of score yourself. You know, you can look at these four dimensions and score yourself, and you might come up with a type. And it's quite likely you'll come up with two or three. I don't use the Myers-Briggs much in my work or for my own self-knowledge, but I remember I've got sort of two or three main ones, and they were surprisingly accurate. And my dominant type was also surprisingly accurate. So I would recommend you go and take a Myers-Briggs test. Again, just search on the internet for that. Before we talk about the Myers-Briggs a little bit more, quick mention from my sponsor, Spirit Quest Tours, which takes small groups on exclusive sacred journeys to Egypt, Peru, and Turkey. Get $500 off your next trip by using the discount code Ross on the booking page linked below. So, how do we constructively use the Myers-Briggs typology? Well, one of the main critiques of the Myers-Briggs is that it's too simplistic. And one of the reason for this is that it's used in recruitment a lot, or it has been used in recruitment a lot. You know, often they'll give you like a Myers-Briggs test to do. And this kind of annoys people because it's like, how can you chop up human personality into 16 categories? Like, surely it's more complicated than that. And in turn, we're just shoehorning people, and then we're biasing our choices based on that. Well, you know, that's fair enough. I've never hired someone based on their Myers-Briggs type, and I don't really imagine myself doing that, to be quite honest. Although I would, you know, I'd be looking at their personality. I don't think I'd necessarily be calculating their Myers-Briggs type, but let's face it, we all use people's personalities to analyze them and to see how well we fit with them. I guess the point here is not to grasp onto it too tightly. You know, if you do a Myers-Briggs personality test and it gives you one dominant type, it's quite tempting to just grab onto it and say, well, that's who I am. You know, I'm an introvert, and I use, you know, I view the world with my intuition and I make decisions with my heart and so on and so forth. It can, again, it just makes this, it makes what is a useful tool into like a dogma and something that's absolute. These things are not perfect, right? And there's a lot of criticism of these different personality systems. I guess like with any other typology, it's just, you know, do it. Does it help you make sense of yourself? Good. And does it help you make sense of other people? That's also good. But not to like take it as an absolute fact or an absolute truth, and not to grab onto it and to like artificially, you know, accentuate your type. Just to use it as like a tool for self-knowledge, right? Because there's so many Myers-Briggs types, you probably will have more than one. You know, in fact, I tend to see myself, when I've done the Myers-Briggs before, it's come up with like two or three big ones. And so I don't take too much stock in the Myers-Briggs. I guess I see it as like, when you do a Myers-Briggs test, you're getting like a constellation of tendencies in your personality that'll light up certain areas of the Myers-Briggs matrix more than others. And so it's not about one type. It's about the overall tendencies that are revealed, in my opinion, right? But as I said, you know, do these tests and you know, what jumps out at you? Maybe the introvert-extrovert thing makes a lot of sense to you. Maybe the masculine-feminine thing helps you a lot. Maybe the Myers-Briggs jumps out at you. Maybe you listen to the Enneagram episode next week and it jumps out at you a lot, the Enneagram. So whatever is useful for you, you use that. And not to like use too many or to get too obsessed with being a certain personality type. All right, folks, so we've studied a little bit about what the personality typology systems are. We've studied the extrovert and introvert typology. We've studied the masculine feminine typology. We've spoken about the Myers-Briggs. Again, I really encourage you to both think about these in yourself and other people, and I encourage you to go away and do the tests and pay attention to those that really jump out and that seem to explain a lot of your character. So we're going to continue on next Wednesday with part two of my personality typology systems series. We're going to cover two more systems, and we're also going to look more generally at what this means, how we can use it, and a deeper look at what personality really is, which to me is where the real juice is. From now until then, I recommend you listen to my episode, What is Psychology?, which is number 143, and it's in my psychology playlist. By the way, on the homepage of my website, deep-psychology.com, you'll find all 17, I believe, playlists of mine, because there are over 150 episodes, so it really helps if you've got the playlist there. It's just on the podcast platforms, you do not get that. Also, really encourage you to listen to my 20-episode Enneagram playlist, which I'll link to in the description as well. There's always new long-form episodes every Wednesday, snippets on Thursday, Sunday and Tuesday, all at 9 p.m. Central European Time, 8 p.m. UK Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you want to go deeper with this work, join my fortnightly newsletter, pre-order my latest book, The Boundless Body, or try a free coaching session with me. Links are in the description to all that. All right, I'm four-time author and coach Ross Edwards. This is a Deep Psychology Podcast, and I will see you next Wednesday. Take care.